supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
I'm Dan Gottlieb. Thanks for listening to Voices in the Family. Sexy clothes, sexy dolls, sexy song lyrics, sexy music. Everywhere we look, we see young girls exposed to highly sexualized messages. This has raised great concern among parents, teachers, community groups, and new research is making a connection between this sexualization and disorders like depression, anxiety, and eating disorders. So what's the link, and what can we do? Well, Dr. Ellen Zurbriggen is the lead author on a recent American Psychological Association study on the sexualization of girls. She's an associate professor of psychology at the University of California, Santa Cruz. Ellen, welcome to the show. Ellen, do we have you?
Hi, this is she.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's wonderful to be here.
And Dr. Jane Shore is a psychotherapist in Philadelphia. She's co-founder of selfmatters.org. It's a website dedicated to strengthening self-esteem. Jane, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
And we'd like to hear your calls. Our number is 888-477-9499. If you're the parent of young girls and you're troubled by what's happening, want to know what can be done, or if you don't think it's a problem, give us a call, 888-477-9499. Ellen, I don't know if you heard the opening. Eileen, I don't know if you heard the opening piece, but I talked about taking my niece into a clothing store that specialized in clothes for young girls, 10 to 14 years old. And I was really troubled by what I saw, you know, thong underwear, sexy T-shirts, so on and so forth. But this stuff apparently has been around for years. So what prompted you to take a look at that?
Well, the clothing that you're talking about, it seems that has been increasing recently, and that, you know, 15 years ago we didn't see the same levels of sexualized clothes for young girls, so there weren't thongs and sexy lingerie in sizes that would fit an 8-year-old. So that actually was one of the anecdotal issues that prompted the study, that people had noticed this. It seemed to be increasing, and we wanted to take a look at that.
Do you know why?
Why it's increasing?
Yes.
Presumably, manufacturers and media producers are going in this direction to increase their markets, to make sales. But one of the things that I think is kind of ironic is that most of the parents we've talked to seem very eager to have other alternatives for their daughters. And so it seems that there's a large market that's not being tapped by having such a saturation of clothing and media products like this for girls.
Jane, girls are going into puberty much earlier, and I wonder if there's anything there that's changing their interest in what's being marketed to them. Are they more interested in more sexual material because they're going into puberty earlier?
Well, they're becoming number to sexual material, and they're becoming number to being objectified as sexual objects and identifying with it. I do think that some of the difference that's happening now is that the APA and other organizations didn't do something 10 and 15 years ago when the sexualization that was instituted in marketing and advertising towards women was not stopped, was not spoken out about except for smaller interest groups and those that are certainly interested, certainly have recognized the correlation between the sexualization and advertising and the increase in lack of self-esteem and body image distortion.
Do you see that parallel that way, Eileen?
Well, I think that there's been a concern among psychologists who study sexualization, across time. Like, I don't think that it's new. I think it's great that the APA was able to find the funding to really focus on this problem and to put the staff and resources towards putting this task force report together, and it focuses on the sexualization of girls and young women.
I hear what you're saying about it getting worse. I mean, it really has been going on forever. I mean, I remember ads when I was a kid, seeing ads from the 40s, from the 30s, I'm sure from forever. You know, we have sold based on women looking, being sexy by whatever standards it was of the day. But you seem to be saying, Eileen, things have gotten dramatically worse recently.
There seems to be more of a saturation effect. So girls might see some images. So maybe we had Madonna, who was a highly sexualized media icon, but she was just one example. And the level, the frequency, the prevalence of sexualization is increasing. And the report did find a number of studies that looked in across various media to see if the sexualization of women was increasing over time, and virtually all of those studies found that it has been. So we're getting more of a saturation effect and not as many other models for girls.
How did you define sexualization in your study?
We had a four-pronged definition, but very briefly, someone is sexualized if they're valued for their sexual appeal only, and this sexual appeal is based on a very narrow kind of physical attractiveness. So you can't be sexy for being smart or funny, just how you look, and it's a very narrow and unattainable, basically, ideal. And people are sexualized when they're treated as sexual objects for the use and enjoyment of someone else rather than as a real person with their own desires and thoughts and feelings.
One of the things that causes me great concern, and I'd like you to follow up, Jane, because you talked about desensitization. The thing that causes me concerns is what boys and girls today consider normal. I mean, even PG movies can show some what I would consider pretty erotic material. I mean, it's shaded, it's screened, it's implied, but it's there. So if this is seen as normal, what's going to happen to the way boys and girls see girls now and going forward?
Well, it's a great question, and I do think that there's a lot of reason to be concerned for young boys developing into sexual beings, because they're being trained to objectify the females that they see, and they don't even know that they're being trained. The music video industry incorporated the sexualization that was successful in advertising of general products. And now television and movies, and as you can see, fashion for young kids. So boys are going to be more and more so looking at girls as wanting sex, as being sex objects, and will treat them that way and get into some problematic behavior.
Jane, Eileen, I know you are seeing this because you talked about this in the study, but is there any way to look at whether or not this is a change over the last couple decades?
The effect on boys, specifically,
yes.
You mean?
Uh-huh.
There has been not as much research done on boys, and looking at change over time would be a good thing to do. Obviously, we would have to look at only the media images that were presented to people 20 years ago. We can't go back in time and study boys 20 years ago and see how they're doing. But the studies that we do have suggest exactly what Jane was saying, that when you begin to think of your partner as an object rather than a person, it's very difficult to have a healthy adult sexual relationship with them, and because intimacy requires that you interact with someone as a person, not as an object.
Well, when you look, though, at puberty, around age 13 to 15, 17, I wonder what's changed. I remember, I'm going to make a confession here and probably embarrass myself, but when I was in puberty, I objectified girls. I saw those bodies, and that's all I was really interested in. I wasn't interested in their minds or their emotions, and I know I can speak for certainly a lot of my friends. I mean, I wonder how much of that's been going on forever and how much of that's pathology and how much is normal development, Jane?
Well, I think that girls have been trained to play the part of playing sexy and thinking that that's going to be winning them social attention and social capital. So when you play the part, you can, in that confused time of self-development, get even more confused about what's real and what isn't real in regard to who you are and what's about you.
Let's take a call. We've got Leslie on the line.
Yes. I just want to express my disappointment when I recently took my five-year-old to buy a simple Barbie doll. We went to a few of the large stores, and every Barbie doll had tattoos, belly rings. Their clothing was inappropriate, I thought. So I was very surprised. When I grew up, Barbie dolls wore nice dresses and not bikinis and tattoos. So I'll take my comment off the air now.
Yeah, and the news about dolls, maybe not Barbie, the news about dolls and sexy dolls is not all bad. Eileen, I'd like you to react to that because there's some work that's been done in that area.
Well, I think that it appears that Barbies have changed a bit in response perhaps to the success of the Bratz dolls, who are a more sexualized kind of version of a doll. And I think, again, if we get a saturation effect, then there aren't as many options available to girls if that's a problem. But we did have a success that we talk about in the report. Hasbro had wanted to bring out a line of dolls based on the musical group, the Pussycat Dolls, which is a group that wears highly sexualized clothing and has highly sexualized lyrics. And these were dolls to be marketed to 6 to 8-year-olds. And a grassroots campaign of parents were able to convince Hasbro that this wasn't a great idea. So parents do potentially have a lot of power if they can speak with one voice, saying, we think some things are inappropriate, we'd like better choices for our young girls.
Can you make a concrete recommendation for Leslie and other parents? Is there a website? Is there an organization they can look into to support this kind of work?
Well, one of the groups that that led that effort was Dads and Daughters, and they're also affiliated with a foundation called the C. Jane organization that's doing some analyses and looking at media images, so they can go there. On the APA website at apa.org, they can look at the report, and then there's a set of links, related links that parents can go to.
Yeah, that Dads and Daughters website is a pretty impressive one, and they're doing a great deal of work.
Yeah, it's a great organization.
Well, let's take a short break. We've got lots of people who want to join the conversation. We'll get to them right after our break. We're talking about the sexualization of young girls in the media with clothing and music lyrics. And what the implications are, what that means, what they feel about themselves and what they will going forward. We're also touching on what that means to boys, how it's going to affect relationships. My guests are Dr. Eileen Zurbriggen. She's a lead author of a recent American Psychological Association study on the sexualization of girls. She's an associate professor of psychology at the University of California in Santa Cruz. Dr. Jane Shore is a psychotherapist in private practice here in the Philadelphia area, and she's with the Chance to Heal Foundation. It's an organization that provides education and advocacy regarding eating disorder. I'm Dan Gottlieb. You're listening to Voices in the Family. It's right here on WHYY 91 FM.
University of Pennsylvania's Bipolar Disorders Program supports WHYY. Are you feeling on top of the world or irritable, needing less sleep or having more energy than normal? You may have manic depression. If you are 60 or older, you may qualify to participate in a medication research study at Penn's Bipolar Disorders Program at no cost. For details, 215-746-6414, 215-746-6414.
Are you concerned about a loved one who is using drugs or drinking too much? You may be eligible to participate in research conducted by the Treatment Research Institute. As part of the study, you'll be asked to attend up to 14 sessions with a family trainer and will be compensated for completing questionnaires on a weekly and monthly basis. For details, 877-I-WORRY-2. 877-496-7792. The Family Training Program supports WHYY.
And we're back on Voices in the Family. I'm Dan Gottlieb, your host. We're talking about how the media has been sexualizing girls over the years. Apparently, it's been getting much worse over the last couple of years. We're talking about how it's being done, what impact it's having on these girls, and what to do about it in the long run. My guests are Dr. Eileen Zurbriggen. She's a lead author of a very large, comprehensive American Psychological Association study. She's also an associate professor of psychology at UCLA in Santa Cruz. Dr. Jane Schur is a psychotherapist here in the Philadelphia area, and she's co-founder of selfmatters.org, a website dedicated to strengthening self-esteem. Our phone number is 888-477-9499. If the line's busy, keep trying. We'll squeeze you in. Jane, you referred earlier to kids being desensitized to these images. What about parents over time? I mean, I was at this store. I don't want to mention their name. I was at this store, and I was watching mothers have a detached conversation with their 10, 11-year-old girls about thong underwear, and I was kind of blown away.
Right. It's a great question. Well, a lot of the mothers have been desensitized also from the advertising that's targeted them and from what they've been watching. And I think mothers don't stop enough to think about the implication of dressing their kids in these kinds of clothes. T-shirts at Abercrombie that scream hottie and I'm sexy may seem innocuous, but they're really not. Because different from a doll, when you're dressing your own child up, that child comes to identify with what the T-shirt's saying about themselves.
You're more concerned about the clothing than the dolls.
Absolutely.
Eileen, how about you?
Well, I think that I'm more concerned about the whole picture, that it's in the dolls, it's in the products, it's in the movies, it's in the music lyrics, it's kind of everywhere a girl looks, and it's that that saturation effect that is really problematic.
We talked about mothers being desensitized, and you said they don't look at the implications. We're living in a world where everything is short term, everything is tomorrow, and you know, we want to do what we think is right. We want to please our children. Nobody wants to push their children out of the mainstream, out of what they consider as popular. So at one level, you're asking parents to do the right thing, but it's not an easy thing, Jane.
Well, saying yes to your child is not always doing the right thing. Being mindful about the impact that something has is the job of the adult who's the protective force in a child's life. You know, much like we know that parents who may struggle with their own weight and their body dissatisfaction, that when they make degrading comments about their own bodies, that has immediate impact on their child's self-development and the imitation of that voice that's going to go on internally for the child. When a parent doesn't stop and give some kind of comments that are critical of these kinds of clothing, the child has no way to be able to evaluate it.
Hmm. Let's go back to the phones. We've got Anna on the line. Anna, hi, you're on the air.
Hello, Dr. Gottlieb.
Yes, hi.
Hi, thanks for having this show. You know, my daughter, who is 11 years old, came to me and brought this issue up herself in tears. And she had watched a show on Nickelodeon, which is, you know, a network that's supposed to be for kids, and children her age were doing this really sexualized dancing, and they were all made up, and she asked me if that's the way she's supposed to be.
Ugh.
Which seems amazing to me, but I am impressed that she had the presence of mind to talk to me about it too.
Eileen?
Yeah, and hopefully that was an opportunity for a great conversation between the two of you.
Yeah.
That she came to. I think that it is
frightening, the clothing and the behavior, too, like the sexualized dancing. What happens then is girls really do internalize this idea of themselves as an object to be looked at, and that can have all kinds of repercussions on their mental health and also potentially on their ability to focus and concentrate on schoolwork and other activities.
Yeah, I have one other just additional concern, which is just that our culture seems to have this schism where we're all horrified about molestation and these terrible things that happen to children, and yet set up our kids for exploitations and allow corporations to do this, essentially, to profit from exploiting our kids in this way. And, you know, I'll just, listen to the conversation off the air. Thank you.
Yeah, that really is an interesting disconnect. We have found the pariahs of our culture, and they're the pedophiliacs, and we look for them under every bed and around every corner, and yet we make our little girls sexy and attractive.
Right.
So what's that disconnect about? Jane, let me turn to you. You have any thoughts?
Well, I think much like we've had to teach teenagers and adults about media literacy, that the media really is targeting us to be dissatisfied with ourselves and sexualizing advertising in order to get us to want to buy more and spend more money, we're now having to do that with younger kids. And that means that doing it just one-on-one, one parent to one child, is insufficient. We've got to get our schools involved. We've got to get parent groups involved. We've got to begin talking to the groups of parents that we know, because advertisers do respond to numbers. And so if we can get people to boycott certain stores or certain products, they will change.
Eileen, you've got some specific programs listed in your APA report. I'm thinking specifically something in schools about media awareness?
Exactly. One of our recommendations is to increase the access to media literacy programs for all children, and they've been shown to be really effective in other domains, so helping kids to deconstruct messages about alcohol or other topics, and we'd like to see sexualization brought into the media literacy curriculum so that girls and boys can begin to critique and question the kinds of messages that are being given to them and giving them the tools to be able to resist these messages and make other choices for themselves. And I just want to say I agree with Jane that individual parents, it's just so hard to do this alone, and that we really do want schools to be involved and girls groups and parents banding together can be much more effective just in supporting each other, but also being a stronger voice towards the media producers and the manufacturers.
Boy, you know, I'm listening to you and I'm thinking we are a strange culture. You know, we push towards abstinence and just say no and denying our sexuality and not talking about it, and on the other hand, you know, we subsidize people who make these kind of products, who dress our kids. We're just an interesting society. I guess that fits also, Jane, with eating disorders. We're an obese culture, and you know, our rate of eating disorders continues to climb.
Absolutely. And this trend's only going to make eating disorders increase.
Go on. What's the connection?
Well, the connection is that the more disconnected one is from their own body, the more you're prone to developing a disorder of some sort. And an eating disorder develops out of oftentimes dieting and the following of a plan and a shouldn't about what you're supposed to eat and how you're supposed to look and what you're supposed to weigh, and it is completely disconnected from the reality base of hunger and body type and set point and what a body wants to and will gravitate towards healthily holding as a body weight.
Let's go back to the phone. We've got Karen on the line.
Hi
Karen.
Me.
Hi.
I just want to take issue with some of the comments about media literacy. I think for young children, our job as parents, and I'm talking about children who are in the early elementary years, our job as parents is to really protect them from the media. My children don't watch television because it's so saturated with those kinds of inappropriately sexualized imagery. And now that my daughter is 10 and a half, 11 years old, we're starting to talk a little bit about the print media and some of those messages. But she doesn't get the choice about wearing those kinds of sexualized clothing. We go into the stores and those clothing choices aren't made available to her. But it does help to have her not completely saturated and having her not have subliminally adopted those attitudes. And I think we need to do a little bit more as parents stepping away from the media. And I'll take my comments off the air.
Well, before you do, Karen?
Okay, yes, Dr. Donnelly?
When you go into these stores with your daughter, what kind of clothing does she want?
Well, I think what has helped is that her school has a dress code that's supportive of these kinds of choices. Her school has a dress code that says you don't wear logos and inappropriate writing on your clothing. And that has been very supportive of that, you know, and that her clothing needs to be comfortable and appropriate for her to move and play in.
Okay. Well, thanks so much for calling. Let's hear some reaction to your perspective. I would imagine neither one of you are going to disagree with parents being more involved and simply not letting girls wear these clothes. But what are both of your thoughts about not letting them have access to the media? I'm curious. Eileen, let's start with you.
Well, I think, Karen made a kind of a developmental argument there, saying that when they're really young, you want to just protect them and not expose them to it. But as they get older and as they begin to have the capacity to understand and critique media or clothing choices or whatever, and as you as a parent are less able to protect them, then you want to give them the tools to be able to critique those. And I think that's a great way to think about it, that, you know, a 2-year-old, you can perhaps control her access completely. A 12-year-old, you can't. And nor do you want to, because part of your job as a parent is to raise your kids to go out in the world and be able to take care of themselves. So this idea of doing things slightly differently at different ages, I think, is a great one.
Well, it's also a great way to raise children anyway.
Right.
You know, Jane?
I think it's great, and I think we also have to recognize that younger kids are being exposed by seeing a fourth grader wearing clothes, even if the first grader isn't wearing those clothes, and that while one person in one home may not allow their child to look at magazines or TV, that if they go to another child's home, they're going to be exposed to it. So exposure's going to happen. Talking about why this is happening in the media is really important. And the bottom line, it's happening because of economic profit, not because it makes anybody feel good. It is bad for everybody's self-esteem.
Right, right. This is true. Let's go back to the phones. We've got Bruce on the line.
Hello?
Bruce?
Yes, hello.
Hi.
Hi, Doc. I just called to relate a story for anyone out there who thinks that maybe you folks are full of hot air. I lived with a woman and her daughter for 8 years, a significant other. The woman was an alcoholic and an abusive woman. I stayed with him. At the end, I stayed because of the kid. I wanted to protect her as well as I could. And eventually, I had to leave. But I stayed close to the kid. I'd call her, she'd call me, whatever. And one day, a brouhaha broke out, and the kid called me up, or it was the mother, called me up. And turns out, the mother had taken she was 12 years old by this time, taken her to Fredericks of Hollywood to buy her underwear, and then bought her a leather jacket. Here I am, come and get me leather jacket. And that turned into a fight. And, they parted company, then they got back together again, and now that little girl is 23 years old, and she's a porn star. She has sex with men and women on camera.
That's kind of a heartbreaking story. It does raise a question about what contributes to that. Was it the clothing, the fact that the girl was sexualized when she was young, or that she was multiply traumatized by her childhood? Jane, any reaction to what you've heard?
Well, without going to the specifics of that particular person, certainly when kids are not protected by parents and they're seen as extensions of the parent, and I think that they get into trouble more. So that these sexy clothes right now, when we begin to question why are parents buying these clothes, some of the reason is because the parents see these kids as an extension of themselves. So it doesn't, it's no longer that they want their kid to look cute, but cute now looks sexy. And so if my kid's looking sexy, then maybe I'm looking sexy.
You know, you talk about parents protecting children. Eileen, parents would argue that they don't let their children out of their sight. You know, they are with their, especially young children, all the time. They're careful about what schools they go to, who they play with. They could argue that they are protecting children, except for the media part.
Well, and that's a big but. That's a big exception, that it is extremely hard to try to protect your child from all the gendered and sexualized messages that are in the media, because it's all around us. We're exposed to so many advertisements every day and so many other portrayals in the media. So it's a big job to try to keep your young child from being exposed to that.
Eileen, in your research, what's the link between exposure and depression in girls?
Most of the studies that have looked at that have focused on the idealized physical body, a very thin, very beautiful body. So it seems to be that seems to be part of the link. Although, as Jane was mentioning, when you're not in touch with your body, when it's something that you're not feeling, but it's just something to be looked at, that is a potential mechanism as well.
There are some benefits that these girls get, and you mentioned that in your study, and I say benefits in quotes, from dressing seductively. They have a feeling of power in their peer social group.
Right, popularity, attention. Mm-hmm. All of us crave attention, and if you get positive attention from wearing these clothes, from your friends, from boys, that feels like something good and can feel empowering. But we think that all these costs that are associated with it completely outweigh that, and would be much better to create a society where you can get a lot of attention for just being who you are and playing sports and doing music and art and other things like that that don't have these negative consequences.
There was a, you know, I'm sure you're familiar with the classic American Association University Women study from 10 or 15 years ago that showed that girls in puberty, their self-esteem went down, plummeted, and tended to stay down. And it's just these girls that are wearing these clothes, are being marketed to, and they're having the illusion of power, the illusion of self-esteem. But that's not real self-esteem. It's like eating candy when you're hungry. You know, there's no nutrients in there.
Right, and if you're able to meet this ideal, you can perhaps have a temporary boost in self-esteem. It can feel good to be matching up to what you think you're supposed to be doing. But as you say, it's sort of like a temporary sugar high. You can't meet it for very long, and it comes at a great cost, really kind of denying your own desires and your own agency.
Yeah, a great cost. Let's get another phone call in before we take our break. We've got Sarah on the line. Sarah?
Hello.
Sarah, hi. You're on the air.
Hi, thanks. I'm a psychotherapist in private practice in Pennsylvania over 25 years, and I see lots of individuals, families, couples, and folks of all ages. And I can't tell you how deeply appreciative I am of all of you for addressing this issue. I see the negative effects of women and girls being sexualized in the ways that you've all described in my practice constantly, and not just with the eating disorder kids and women, but those who don't have eating disorders per se. Something that strikes me as I heard your introduction and some of the conclusions from the APA study was that a colleague of mine and I about 10 years ago had done a study of the effects of pornography in the community on men, women, and children, and we'd actually testified in Harrisburg about it. And a lot of the conclusions that you're coming to are very similar to how pornography affects men and women. The low self-esteem, self-confidence for women, depression, anxiety, distorted body image. And for males, the unrealistic expectations of their partners related to this, lack of intimacy, lack of respect, and so forth. So I want to thank you all for bringing this
to
our attention.
And thank you for your work.
One other quick comment is that something that I don't think has been mentioned, which to me is so concerning also, is the stark contrast between how males are depicted in the media compared to females, where males are, I would say, completely or overly dressed most of the time, and women and girls are so stripped down. And so there's such a psychological contrast in terms of the effect as well, I think.
Jane, you reacted to what Sarah just said. What are the implications of men being dressed in the media and women not?
Well, I think it goes hand in hand with objectifying women, and that men are not equal in that regard. Although a lot of the fashion of males is with their pants hanging down. And if you just think of the metaphor of that symbolically, their pants are hanging down. It's not sexy, it's sort of crude and gross, but it is the fashion, and I think it says something in the matching of the sexualization of females.
Sarah, thanks so much for calling in. I'll tell you, you know, Eileen, I listen, read the report and listen to you, and I listen to stories from callers and Jane and Sarah. And what flashed through my mind as I was listening to Sarah was the scene from Network News. You know, I'm mad as hell, and I'm not going to take it anymore because it's just outrageous. We're going to take a short break and talk about more specifically what we can do about what we can all do about. I know there's lots of options. We're talking about the sexualization of girls in the media. My guest here in the studio is Jane Shore, a psychotherapist in Philadelphia. She's the co-founder of selfmatters.org, a website dedicated to strengthening self-esteem. I'm also joined on the telephone by Dr. Eileen Zurbriggen. She's the lead author of the American Psychological Association we referred to. She's an associate professor of psychology at UCLA in Santa Cruz. I'm Dan Gottlieb. You're listening to Voices in the Family. It's right here on WHYY 91 FM.
The Depression Research Unit of the University of Pennsylvania Medical Center supports WHYY. Penn's DRU is conducting research into alternative herbal treatments of anxiety. Symptoms may include nervousness, tension, sleep problems, and concentration difficulty. Those who qualify will receive an initial evaluation and may take part in a research study with chamomile or black cohosh for up to 3 months. For details, 215-662-3462.
Next time on Day to Day.
A little-known casualty of the 1979 Iranian Revolution, the Asiatic cheetah.
Now Iran wants scientists to hurry up and save the few cats that remain.
It's the first time pretty much since the revolution that these kinds of intensive research projects have happened in Iran, which is a real change for the better in Iran.
Scientists race to save the fastest creature on Earth.
Next time on Day to Day.
This afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
And we're back on Voices in the Family. We're talking about the sexualization of girls. We can't shelter our girls from the sexualization they're exposed to on a daily basis, but we can offer them healthy alternatives. In 2000, a musician started a week-long all-girl rock camp in Portland, Oregon. The girls learned how to play instruments, they formed bands, wrote songs, and performed them for an audience. The idea has since spread to other cities and is coming here to Philadelphia this summer. Our producer, Mike and Scott, spoke with Beth Warshaw. She's the director of Girls Rock Philly.
Beth, you were in New York last summer and the summer before, and you volunteered as a counselor at a rock camp for girls. What was that like?
It was probably the most positive experience I've ever had. Everyone there, I mean, it was all female, which is a rare experience these days, but it was also so positive and so focused on the girls, the campers there, that we didn't really have time or energy to really argue with each other. And even when we did, it was all respectful and listening to each other in a way that you could really feel the difference instantly.
What were the girls doing? What were they there to do?
The campers were there to basically meet each other, learn to play an instrument, and also get together and play in bands that the counselor chose for them.
And what kind of thing did you see happen among the girls? Were they excited about the music, excited about just being there? What was it like?
Well, it was a range of 8 to 18. So you get a huge range of emotions. You get 8-year-old girls who are squealing and have met their new best friend in an hour. And you get a lot of people who are too cool for school. But by the end, because they were given their own project and they were able to work together, and they were basically made to listen to each other, and they had no choice but to listen to each other, that they really opened up to the whole process. And that when I came back this year, I saw a good chunk of girls had returned.
Obviously, the girls are there to learn music, to learn an instrument, to play together, to create something. But there's an underlying concept of, I guess, teaching these girls to be confident, to become musicians.
There's the underlying concept, I think, is to get them to express themselves and to meet each other and to realize that they are cooperating and that you don't have to fight each other. You don't have to be the best. You have to do what you do, but in harmony with everybody else. And a band is a really amazing cooperative group structure. You all do something different. You all contribute in your own way. And you can really be the best that you can be within that structure and make something greater than the sum of the parts.
So when you came back from New York, you decided to bring this idea to Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm.
So when are you getting started?
Well, we're getting started this summer. We're still waiting on confirmation from the venue. And once we have the venue, then we can hammer out the dates. But it's going to happen, fingers crossed, in August this year.
When we think about music and girls, unfortunately, the images that come to mind are cute girls jumping around in tiny little outfits singing a little song. It's certainly something that contributes to the sexualization of girls. So is your program designed to kind of go against that trend?
Yeah, and hopefully in all of those different ways that you mentioned, we're going to encourage them to wear what they want. Also to be aware that nothing about them is little. We don't use words like cute and adorable, and we're really going to at least linguistically shy away from calling them diminutive terms. We don't say, that's a great outfit you've got on today, because that's a consumer choice. We say, that was a really great piece that you wrote today, or I really like the way you expressed your opinion, or I like how you worked that out, that conflict. It's not about their consumption, but about their creation, and I think that is a real fundamental difference.
What you're hearing right now is the band The Pink Slip. They're playing a song they composed at last summer's Rock Camp for Girls in New York. And what we just heard before that was an interview with Beth Warshaw. She's the director of Girls Rock Philly, an organization that she's putting together for a week-long summer camp for girls in Philadelphia. For more information, please visit their website. They're at girlsrockphilly.org. Well, we're hearing a different take on what can and should be done for girls. And Eileen, it kind of struck me about what you recommended in your study about extracurricular activities for girls, specifically athletics. Why?
Why specifically athletics?
Why extracurricular activities? Yeah, why specifically athletics?
Well, programs like the Girls Rock Philly or any extracurricular program, we think it will work because it gives girls the message that they can be active and not passive. And I love that quote. It's not about their consumption. It's about their creation. They can do things in the world. They can go out there and create, and they don't just have to be looked at and be consumed. We stress athletics a little bit in the report, mostly because this research is there more for athletics than other activities. Athletics require you to think of your body for what it can do rather than what it looks like, most sports anyway. So it may be especially powerful in working against these sexualizing messages.
That's interesting. Jane, any reaction?
Well, I'm the mother of two athletes, so I'm certainly an advocate of athletics, but there are also a lot of kids that don't have athletic predispositions. So I think that anything a kid could get passionate about and can feel excited about fits the bill. I also think that we have to be really careful. My fear, as I was saying to you earlier, Dan, is that as we have seen girl-on-girl behavior start measuring and scrutinizing around thinness, am I not fat, do I look fat in this, that I think we're going to see scrutinizing about sexiness, and that parents and older siblings need to keep an eye and ear open for that and intervene by making comments about that.
How so? For example?
Well, comments that little kids aren't sexy. Sexy is something, you know, that adults are, and that there's reasons why you don't want to be sexy as little kids. You don't want people looking at you like that. That's sexy is something that happens when you're ready to have sex, and at this point in time, kids aren't ready to have sex. Sex comes when you're able to have responsibility.
Eileen, what about your findings? What's a parent to do? What works?
Well, we try to recommend two courses of action. One, that parents do band together and try to demand other alternatives, so to change what's available to us out there in the culture. But then also on an individual level, to talk to daughters, to give them your perspective, to give them other alternatives, let them know that you value them for other things besides how they look, and give them other options, things to do in the world.
Let's get another phone call in. We've got Liz on line 6. Liz, hi, you're on the air.
Oh, hi, how are you?
Good, thanks. How are you?
I'm doing very well today. I'm just really excited to hear the conversation started and being so thoroughly evaluated.
What can we do for you? Had a question, comment?
No, actually, I wanted to concur with a lot of the stuff that the experts are saying. I am a woman at 39 years old who struggled with an eating disorder starting at the age of 10, and it affected me for the majority of my, you know, adolescent and adult life, and felt that the real turning point for me was when I took and said, okay, no more TV, no more consumer magazines.
Even as an adult?
As an adult, yeah. I mean, it affected me up until I was 25, 27. When you start that young, being consumed by your body and what it looks like in body image, it becomes a part of your daily behavior. And it becomes part of your makeup, your sense of self, your identity.
That's a powerful story. Thanks so much for calling, and glad you're doing well. Part of the message I'm hearing from Jane and you, Eileen, is that it's our job as parents to help our children discover what they have on the inside rather than how good they can look, act, perform on the outside. But that's pretty time-consuming. Eileen?
It is time-consuming. I guess I'm just reacting that I think it is the job of parents, but you know, as a culture or as a group, we also, I think, have an opportunity maybe to create a different world, and so that parents are not having to fight against this onslaught of messages, but perhaps all of us, those with and without children, can try to create a better culture so that it's not such a huge job for parents.
Do me a favor, look in the crystal ball, Eileen. What happens if we fail this, and what are things going to look like a decade from now?
Well, I, rather be optimistic and think that we are able to fight back. And one of the things that was encouraging to me about doing the research for this report is to see that there are a lot of groups out there, something like Girls Rock Philly. People are hungry to do something, and we do have a lot of power to fight back. We don't have to just lay down and say we're going to let this roll over us and do what it will to us.
Well, that's true, because, grassroots groups, I never stop saying ended a war and turned things around with smoking, and now is doing something about trans fats. Jane, tell us about your vision of the next decade.
Well, my guess is that much like advertising moved from targeting women to men, now they're at young girls, that they're going to now go for young boys because it's a whole other market.
And what are the implications for this? I mean, what do you see happening to kids over a decade?
Well, the implications are that a lot of the values that they get fed come from marketing. They don't come from what we know makes for solid citizens of the world. And it's all about appearance and image producing, and so they're going to be more and more consumed with the kind of image they're creating.
And parents have been giving away their power to the media over time.
Absolutely.
Okay, so the message is help our girls discover what they have inside and worry less about what's going on outside. I want to thank you both for joining me today. It's been an important show. My guests have been Dr. Eileen Zurbriggen and Jane Shore. Zurbriggen's lead author on the American Psychological Association study on sexualization of girls. You can find that at apa.org. She's an associate professor of psychology at UCLA in Santa Cruz. Dr. Jane Shore is a psychotherapist in the Philadelphia area. She's co-founder of selfmatters.org. It's a website dedicated to strengthening self-esteem. She's also involved in the Chance to Heal Foundation. It's a wonderful foundation that provides education and advocacy regarding eating disorders. Earlier on, we heard about a rock camp for girls taking place in Philadelphia. For more information about them, go to girlsrockphilly.org. And you can reach us at voices@whyy.org. You can reach me directly at drdangottlieb@aol.com. I'm going to be moderating a WHYY's 7th Annual Wider Horizons Forum this Thursday at March 22nd from 9 a.m. to 10:30. You can find out more about that at WHYY.org. Well, the engineer for today's show has been Al Banks. Christine Dempsey is our executive producer. Our associate producers are Lisa Walters. Voices in the Family is produced by Mike and Scott. I'm Dan Gottlieb, your host. Enjoy your week, my friends. Day to day.